Hello, I'm Guy Foster, and in this episode of the Bruin Podcast, we're going to be talking about US equities. And we just spoke to Cormac Weldon in the immediate aftermath of last week's election. So now I'm going to be talking to Bill Hench, manager of the Legg Mason Royce US Small Cap Opportunity Fund, whose slightly different approach has actually lent itself to this week's news about a potential vaccine. But bear in mind, we can't guarantee sources from outside Bruin Dolphin, and tax legislation and allowances can change. And when investing, your capital is at risk. Investment values can increase or decrease because of currency fluctuations, and future performance can differ from that of the past. Now, bearing all that in mind, Bill's going to take us through the small cap opportunities he sees in the current market. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast. Now, we're doing a few of these on US equities and the situation in the US at the moment, because there's just so much going on right now. And we're delighted that this time we're able to speak to a previous podcast guest, Bill Hench. And Bill, you may remember, is the manager of the Legg Mason Royce US Small Cap Opportunities Fund. So, Bill, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Look, this is such an interesting time. I think we scheduled this actually thinking it would be a great time to talk to you, not really knowing what the election result was going to be, but that it was probably going to be a pretty interesting time one way or the other. And that's proven to be the case. But we've also had the added news on Monday this week from Pfizer that there is some promising news on a coronavirus vaccine. So this is a really great time to be able to talk to you about these things. I guess, first of all, if we cast our minds back a million years to the 2020 election result, or the beginning, middle and end of vote counting, I mean, how do you feel that election result has impacted your view of how you should be investing going forwards?
It hasn't changed it a lot. I think that there were certain things that were assumed that are probably going to remain, and I say probably because there are two Senate seats that haven't been decided yet. But you know, the House will remain with the current leadership or with the party that was there, the Democrats. And you know, there's an incredibly high probability that when Georgia does its revote in early January for its two Senate seats, that at least one, but probably two of those will go with the GOP. So you'll have a Senate that's Republican, you'll have a new president. And it's funny how we call it gridlock. However, we seem to be spending more money than ever. So I'm not sure where the gridlock part comes in. They seem to be doing more and more than ever. So it hasn't really changed our thinking a lot. There was some fear on our part that if they did, you know, have the quote unquote blue wave, that you might get a corporate tax increase. And for those of you who have been or listened to some of our podcasts in the past about this, you know, the tax cut that hit corporate America really was much more important to companies in the small cap universe than the big cap universe. Everybody says it was very important for big cap and corporate America, but truth be told, you know, Apple and Google and names like that have a broad global presence have a lot more leeway with their taxes, and therefore you know, could smooth things out a little bit more. Whereas smaller companies, especially like those in our portfolio, really didn't have as many avenues to sort of manage that tax rate. So when the cut went down, it was wonderful. So we were concerned that a big change in government might reverse that, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
To clarify then, your feeling is that at that blue wave scenario would have been net a negative for your part of the market, would it?
It could have been, right? Had they really pushed to get a tax increase as part of the big platform, and had maybe some more of the left leaning candidates done well, that could have been, I think, a big issue.
By regulatory. The regulatory is still a net concern. Maybe we might come onto that in just a moment, but not overcome by, say, the stimulus hopes, which I think were what lots of people were saying. You know, maybe this would be worth it in terms of the potential for tax rises, but the better stimulus news that you might get ahead of that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so what about the regulatory environment? Do you see that being an impediment to companies operating in your space with a democratic president?
You know, as luck would have it, I do, but I don't think it's going to hurt us in particular. The two biggest exposed areas would be energy and small banks, financials, which are things that we really aren't attracted to. We're about as underweight small banks as we've ever been. And the same can be said for energy. But if you look at our energy portfolio, it doesn't look that low because we've got sort of alternative solar and things of that nature in there. But our oil and gas, which I think will definitely have a broader regulatory issues, and banking will have issues. Good for us because we don't have much exposure there. And again, we tend to think that you're always going to get these broad sweeping changes, right? When anything happens, like a big event happens, right? A vaccine happens, an election happens. You think, oh my goodness, all these other things that have been pretty stable for a while are going to change. And in point of fact, I don't think you're going to see a huge change in a lot of other issues that are affecting the portfolio. And I don't want to sound, I do always look for the good. And I think we were blessed with some good news with between the election and the vaccine news this week. We didn't have a crystal ball, but we did, I think, position ourselves in a very fortunate way going forward.
And that's being positioned for an economic expansion, is it then? Or?
So a little bit of that, but also more importantly, for just a renormalization, if you will, right? So we had to make some decisions when things were going crazy in March and April, and the, pretty much the decision was, well, there were two things. First, we decided to get out of anything that had balance sheet broad balance sheet risk, right? So some of the E&P names in energy, some of the bank names that were a little extended that we thought would do okay in sort of a normal environment had to be re-examined. And most of them were sold because the environment clearly wasn't normal, right? So our assumptions about sort of either flat or continued growth were put on hold. But the other thing we did is that we also realized that at some point things would get better or start to discount things getting better. So much of that money that we raised by selling things that we were nervous about and thought would not do so well went into things like consumer and other basic industries that would do well when we started to open up again. So what does that mean? We bought some airlines, we bought some restaurants, we bought things as basic as coffee shops, right? Things that you didn't have to do a lot of work to sort of start doing business, getting back to normal again. So in other words, if everybody started going to work again, they'd go to Dunkin' Donuts to get their coffee before they did in the morning, right? And then they'd go out to Chewy's or BJ's restaurants for a nice dinner on Saturday night with their family and so forth. And those things worked out. We got a little lucky with some of the housing. We didn't foresee the sort of move to suburbia that has captured the American home buyer. For 3 years, we've been reading about everybody moving back into the city, and now everybody's moving out of the city. So the play would have not have been by a U.S. mutual fund, but a moving company. I think that's where I could have made a lot of money and a lot of money for investors too, but we'll see what happens next time. So some of the trends have been very, very helpful. As always, we were punished severely during the downturn, but as always, we I think did a good job of filling the portfolio up in that end of March, April, May period with names that we thought could provide the biggest bump. And we've had a nice bump, and I think we'll continue to have a nice bump because, as one of our, we right before this meeting, I had a meeting, we have our usual morning meeting with the team, and one of the analysts was noting how many of the names, even after a big jump that we've had in the last couple of weeks, have really almost gotten a half as good as they used to be as far as prices can go. So there seems to be, in our opinion anyway, a good runway to make some more money going forward. And we'll have fits and starts, and I'm sure we'll wake up one morning and we'll hear something bad about a vaccine and and perhaps this, you know, there's a risk of this or that. And we'll get another chance, I think, to replenish some of these things that maybe we didn't get a chance to buy enough of. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with stimulus. I don't know what's going to happen with taxes or anything else like that. I do know that at the guts of the economy, there is strength that is surprising. And whether it's in automobile sales or home sales, chip production, just an incredible amount of good things happening. Not as well publicized as the bad things, you know, as awful as restaurants and as awful as travel and leisure. You know, those things are out in front of us every day, and there's an awful toll on unemployment, and you know, and there is just this just awful situation in a lot of the cities where where I live in Manhattan. I mean, you know, my whole West Side looked like plywood factory. I mean, everybody had put up all the plywood just in case, you know, the presidential election didn't go as it was supposed to go, I guess. But the good news is, I think everybody's taken the plywood out. The bad news is they've got to find some place to put it all now. Underlining, if you would have had some extra time and listened to the 150 or 200 conference calls that our team has listened to so far this quarter, you'd be surprised at the strength and the optimism going forward. And a lot of that, you know, has to do with those things that are obvious, right? You know, Amazon and Google and Netflix and Facebook and Trade Desk and PayPal are all doing well. And there's a food chain associated with that, right? So if you're in Facebook's food chain, you know, you're obviously selling a lot of servers. And if you're an Amazon and you're a good supplier to Amazon, or if you're even if you're a user of, you know, some of the AWS or Google or Microsoft's back office problem, you're saving money, right? So margins have been good, business has been good, but there are these, you know, pockets, and you know, I think many have talked about this. There's this haves and have-nots. The haves, where things are going well, you're in that food chain, right? And this food chain has taken, you know, stimulus of, I think ISI, you know, came out and said, I think there's some 600 or so stimulus packages around the world, right? And it seems to be never ending. And you put all that money in this funnel, and to date, that funnel has been pretty tight, you know, with the big FANG names, et cetera, right? But that's, you know, as you get back to normal, as you get a vaccine, as there's hope for a vaccine, that funnel will open up a lot. And I think a lot of the other names in the economy will start to do well. And the good news is they don't have to get better than they were. They just have to get back to where they were to make a lot of money, right? So in other words, you know, if you had a restaurant and you had 10% margins and now they're 2%, you know, it doesn't take, they don't have to come back and make 15% margins. They just got to get back to where they were for us to make money. And that's exciting.
So when, I mean, just looking at the performance of businesses around us, and obviously I do this from a UK perspective, but I don't know about from a US perspective. It's obvious that a lot of businesses are finding ways to deal with the economic challenges that we have with us right now. So you have to become an omni-channel distributor if you previously relied on a bricks and mortar presence. And do you see that in the company? Lots of the restaurants obviously really ramping up their takeout and home delivery services and stuff like that. Do you see a kind of sort of creative destruction coming from this very difficult economic environment? And do you think it's going to potentially help some of your companies in the long term?
You do see it, and it is tremendous. And it's funny, and I even see it at the, so I live in Manhattan, but I've been out at the beach since March. So we're fortunate to have a
times are hard.
Have a place at the end of Long Island, and I know some of the local merchants here, and there is a tourist economy here, as you could imagine, for the summer. And you know, I have some friends who are in the hotel business who've actually had a better year than they've ever had.
Really?
As people migrated out from Manhattan, right? Restaurants, believe it or not, even though they had no indoor, the outdoor was so good. You know, I have one friend who's up 25% over his best year last year. And then obviously there are others where it's just absolute disasters, right? But you're dead on when you say that, you know, there have been these changes. And in some businesses, it's a lot easier to do. In others, it's difficult. If you talk to some of the, you know, we have some investment banks. there was a great, one of the CEOs, they asked him how his business, how was it operating under these conditions? And he chuckled and then he said, well, this is, he says, it's really easy, it's efficient. He said, in the old days, if we got a call from a client, you know, I'd have to go assemble a team and get everybody together. He said, you do that now, you can assemble a team in 5 minutes because no longer is your kid, you know, no longer is your one banker at a soccer game and your other one is at a teacher meeting and your other one is flying to Paris or something. He said, everybody's at their desk like you and me. He said, you know, you get the team together in 5 minutes and everybody's ready to work because they're out of their mind going crazy sitting at their desk, right?
Nothing else to do.
So some of these dynamics, you know, have actually helpful to margins. I have a friend who owns a small business with 100 employees. It's as profitable as he's ever been. He's got no T&E. Right. All his the biggest expenses that he had to hire another tech to help get people on board with doing what we're doing and making sure that everybody had a good laptop, everybody had a good printer at home, everybody had a big enough screen. But when you subtract what he wasn't spending on things that he normally spent on, it was a bonanza. And he's very cheery when I talk to him now. And he'd never expected that. He was in the beginning, as a lot of other people said, my goodness, you know, this. I'm going to have to start cutting heads. And in point of fact, he's hiring people. It's, you know, I think if it's like anything else, right, there is going to be tremendous winners and there are going to be tremendous losers. But for the most part, you know, being a small public company is a little to being up Asia, North America, Latin America. You know, most of these companies are small enough that they could be pretty innovative pretty quickly. And the strange sort of outcomes that we never thought of, you know, for instance, our best semiconductor company isn't a leading edge company. They mostly put devices into laptops and desktops and printers and stuff, right? Which, you know, intuitively you say that's not where the growth is, but it is because everybody's working at home and I'm on my second printer, I'm on my second setup for my screens. And my printer, you know, when I went and ordered it on Amazon and said, hurry, there's only four left. And they meant it, you know. So that company, believe it or not, is doing better than sort of, you know, the leading edge, high margin guys, because, you know, he's putting through more product on an existing base of assets and therefore his margins are getting better. And I can go down the line and sort of go name by name where that's happened. You know, the risks are obviously there. The risks are always with us, and there's always the sort of the risk of of something, you know, you the left field event, right? Another COVID type thing or something like that. But you know,
Bill, I want to ask you about that really, because I guess from where we're sitting, you know, we've had a terrible time of it in the UK and Europe with our COVID infections, maybe just beginning to show some signs of turning the corner, but we look across the pond at you guys and the trends really don't look very positive, or where they look pretty bad in terms of infection rates, notwithstanding the better, I don't know what you call it, medium term prognosis with this vaccine announcement. So I mean, I think you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but I mean, how do you factor that into your decision making in the portfolio?
Sure. So we're fortunate in that we have daily commentary and statistics from one of our research providers that we use. And when you start breaking up the numbers, you know, and you look at what's really happening, you know, we still, I think, still 40% of the deaths in the U.S. were nursing home related, which is awful. Mm. But it does lead to say, okay, what's happening here? So the cases, the infections are through the roof. But still no terrific terrifically news. And I'm actually on a foundation board for a nonprofit hospital, so I get a nice look at what's happening in the real world. It's in suburban New Jersey. It's, you know, the numbers are alarming, but when you step back and you realize that for the most part there's no hospitalization involved, there's actually no sickness involved. You know, what we've done extremely poorly as a country is not protect those who need it most. and continue to focus on cases, you know, that are really not the problem. Like, you know, if my kids got sick and I didn't want them, it's a lot easier to deal with than if my mother-in-law got ill, you know, so, but mm-hmm. but we don't distinguish between the two. And that's really problematic. I think just the change in administration, if nothing else, will give a fresh sort of view, and will wipe away all those things that were so objectionable, that many people found objectionable to the last administration, and get some sort of order and maybe a more common sense approach to what is a, you know, severe issue. But it figures in every day, because you know, it's here every day. It's ubiquitous, as we used to say in 1999 and 2000, right? So you think about it all the time, and you think about not only the bad parts, but who's going to do well from this, and not necessarily, you know, with a Schadenfreude type of thing, but, you know, who's going to do well because things have to get done. You know, people have to eat, people have to get in a car, and people have to work, and surgeons have to operate, and knees have to be replaced. And, you know, I have a surgeon friend who's told me that, you know, he's been doing, he's my age, so he's in mid-50s, and he's been a surgeon his whole life, obviously. And he said he's never had more emergency surgeries for gallbladders appendix, because people are waiting still to go to the hospital, you know, because they don't want to get sick. And, you know, he's saying people are coming in. He says he can't believe some of these people are still alive. You know, it's like, how are you standing? Now, I've had my gallbladder taken out in an emergency, and I know how difficult and painful it is. I couldn't for the life of me imagine saying I'm not going to go to the hospital because I'm afraid of COVID. You know, it's just absolutely stunning. But, you know, there have been tremendous changes in the way people operate. And I think for the most part, a lot of these changes will disappear and we'll go back to normal. But others won't, you know. So, you know, we use an online food service for our pets to get we're never going to go back to the pet store, because it's really easy to just sort of say, okay, bring me my dog food every week, you know, by mail. It's so yeah. Things like that, I think you see a lot of change. But maybe some of these other things, the move to suburbia and stuff like that, I don't know what the tail is on that. But the good news, you know, the good news, again, an overriding thing that makes me optimistic is what always does, is that we're able to buy things at really good prices. And therefore, if we just get a continuation of improvements, whether it be it, you know, because don't forget, at some point, we're going to wake up, you and I, we're going to turn the television on, or if you're like me, you're going to still do things like this, which are read newspapers, physical newspapers, and you can still get them, by the way. I'm a crossword junkie, so I have to get the physical paper. But, you know, we're going to come in and we're going to have a whole series. Don't forget, at some point, we're going to come in and it's going to say, you know, viruses were down to this, and then another 10,000. And then, you know, and then Boris Johnson is going to say, I've done this. And Joe Biden's going to say, I've done this. And you're going to have all, you know, the complete opposite of what's happening. And that's going to help, you know, not necessarily the bigger names that have done so well, but I think a lot of the mid-cap and the smaller names that are sort of going to benefit from that broadening out and sort of return to normalization trade. And again, I always love the things getting back to normal from lower levels than sort of being okay and then having to get a lot better, because it's always easier just to sort of get to be okay versus to get really strong. You know, like if I could just, you know, if I could run a mile, great. But you know, if you want me to run a marathon, that's a whole nother story. But getting me back from being out of shape because I've been sitting around drinking too much wine or something, easier to get back into a mile than 10 miles. And I think that's a lot of what's in store for a lot of small companies.
Okay, Bill. Well, look, that's been really useful. I mean, before I let you go then, and just bringing you back to, I guess, what you were talking about at the beginning, you know, when this was first hitting, you wanted to avoid any kind of balance sheet threats, anything like that. I mean, once we've reached this stage in the crisis or this stage in the recovery, does your mind change on that? Do you start thinking that actually a little operational or financial gearing wouldn't be the worst thing because you've got a bit more of an outlook?
Because, you know, our fear is always missing out, right? So the FOMO, as the guy coined the phrase, right? Fear of missing out. And, you know, when I wake up, you know, I don't worry about what we own as much as what I don't own, right? So as I said, you know, we don't own much energy. We don't own much little banks. You know, is there a reason to do that? And so we have a continuous view of that, looking and looking and looking and so it's on the map. It's something that we look at every day. We're pretty happy with the way leverage is now. And you know, point of fact, money is still, you know, probably only oil is cheaper as a commodity, right? it's not an issue for our companies to borrow. Capital is in very good supply. And quite frankly, with the emergence of so many services or the SaaS model, right, the software as a service, and then everything else as a service, the outlays of cash for small businesses are becoming less and less an issue, right? As you get more and more into this variable cost model, where, you know, more and more of your expense side of your income statement becomes a very variable cost versus a fixed cost. A long answer. But we always look, and we haven't sort of turned up the knob yet. I think we're still in the period where it's very early as far as what's going to change and what's not going to change. And there comes the sun, so that's optimistic, right?
Yeah, it does. It does, absolutely.
So there goes the sun, I should say, right? So the answer is we haven't really sort of taken the plunge yet, and. I suspect, you know, you're probably a couple of quarters away from that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, Bill, that's been brilliant. Thanks so much for talking us through how you're dealing with what is right at the moment a bit more of an optimistic market than we've seen at some points this year, at least. And thanks also to all of our listeners as well. So hopefully you've enjoyed yet another take on the US election, but also bringing it a bit more up to date with this exciting news from Pfizer earlier this week as well. Hopefully you found that useful, and we really hope you'll join us again for a future edition of the Bruin Podcast.
Thanks so much.